Today we're talking to Helen Crosswaite, and Helen is going to tell us about her family's experiences in World War II and her memories as handed down by the family.
Yes, hello everybody. I think I'll start with telling you a little bit of background of my family because if I don't, it might be mostly meaningless. Anyway, my dad came over from Great Britain as a young man. I think he was 17 or so when he went to Canada from Liverpool, England, and trapped there for several years and eventually joined the United States Army with World War I. And ended up on a homestead on the Rosebud Reservation in South Dakota. I say reservation because it was a reservation when it started, but as the homesteaders came in, more land was allotted for people to settle. So that's how that was my main tie in with World War II, I think, because my dad had left eight brothers and sisters in London and Liverpool, and they were all older than him except for one brother. The Blitz was in London, was fought from 1940, from July until October 1940. So that means there was a lot of grief in our family because of my dad's family, and he was so tied into listening to the news and everything, and we didn't know the real significance of that until much later. But we always have had close ties with the British relatives and still do. So, because of his family ties, it made it very personal.
Can you tell me why was your father in Britain?
Dad was born in Liverpool in Freshfield, England, which was a little town suburb of Liverpool. And his father, my dad's father, was the manager of the Cunard, the very famous Cunard ship line. They were a most aristocratic family. He was raised by two other women, mostly, but he had a very loving family, and that's how he happened to be in Britain, was because his father was a big businessman in Liverpool. And then all his brothers had taken on architect jobs or something quite uppity up. And my dad was still floundering around, so my grandfather put him on the ocean on a ship on and sent him to other countries in the world for a couple of years, where he saw many, many ports, and by that time he had decided he wanted to come to America. So that's how he ended up on 1,000 acres, I believe it was, in Rosebud country, and it didn't make it. So he joined the United States Army and went to fight in France in World War I, and he went with a number of Native Americans from Millette County. I can't remember their names, if I ever knew them. And I do remember one man's name because I did know him later. His name was Charlie Hughes from White River, South Dakota. And as I said before, he settled then on a homestead in White River, where later on he met my mother, who was also the daughter of a homesteader. And they were married in 1929. All his brothers and sisters were sitting in bomb shelters in London during the Blitz and being bombed every night. As a matter of fact, one of my aunts, Brenda, lost her baby during the Blitz in a bomb shelter because there was no doctor present, and she never had children after that. She was unable to. But it was a hair raiser for my dad, and continued to be until the war was over in 1945, although America had entered the war then.
So he went into the service during World War I,
Right.
and during World War II, he was back in Millette County and following it on
Right.
the radio, knowing that he had siblings over in England. Do you have memories of that in Millette County, of watching your father?
Yes, I do. I have memories of him sitting. My sister reminded me that the other night. She said, "Remember, Helen, how Dad used to sit with his head pressed against the radio and his head in his arms, and listening so that he, and not any, no distraction. We were al not allowed to make distractions during the news time." And this was in ni about 1941. I have these two letters here that my aunts, Dorothy and Constance, wrote. And one of them says something about how many people were killed. I'll read that to you, just one part of one letter. And this is from Aunt Dorothy, and it was written on May 14, 1941. She says, "They are feeding and sleeping people in the hundreds, in halls, etc. People from down the line." What she means there is London and parts of Liverpool who have lost their homes. "I have heard that the casualties for the 9 nights of attack will be about 16,000 killed and wounded. Not large, they say, for the intensity of the raid." And then there was 9 nights of this first bombing. And then she wrote this letter. And then there's another one here. There's another letter here from my Aunt Dorothy. And this one, I'll just read you a paragraph. "We were all dumbfounded at the news about France, but I feel that their nation will not accept these terms, though they are signed. I feel sure something drastic will happen very soon with regard to them." At that one point, the Battle of Britain was being fought with these bombs and the Blitz from July 10, 1940 until October 1940. France was the first country to be taken in that particular raid. Remember, Germany had already taken Poland. Britain and France had already declared war on Germany. And on June 22, 1940, France surrendered. So this is what Dorothy was talking about in her letter, was the surrender of France. And she knew they were going to try and go clear through France and on until they had the whole European front. But that's fortunately not the way it happened. Anyway, my dad was grieving and worried all the time. I was a child, I think, a small child. And then in 1942, we moved to the Pine Ridge Reservation area, and a border town called Martin, South Dakota. And I know many of you know that town. And my memories of that are mostly from school. Some of the things I remember were the rationing of tires, sugar, butter, gas, shoes, those sorts of things, and the savings bonds were bought. One thing that came up in my memory was driving to White Clay, Nebraska for margarine that was colored. Now that's all I remember about that. So evidently butter was rationed too. And somebody else told me just the other day that the margarine that we got in South Dakota had little yellow capsules in it, and we had to mix it up in the white margarine. So we went to White Clay to get some margarine because we knew we could buy it in Nebraska. And that's really, whether it's all true or not, I don't know, but I remember going to White Clay to buy margarine. We saved scrap iron for the scrap drives. For the scrap metal drives, and I don't know yet, nobody could tell me that I asked, who hauled that around and where did it go, because Martin was an inland town and there was no railroad, and certainly not too many people would have had the manpower or gas to drive scrap around to different cities. So all I remember was we saved every bit of metal that we could find. I had three uncles in World War II, Russell, Orville, and Roderick. And I have a picture here of the two, Russell and Orville. My grandmother died when she was 41, leaving Russell and Orville, just little tiny boys, in White River, South Dakota, along with, there were seven of them that went to the orphanage in Dell Rapids. And Russell and Orville were raised then in the orphanage in Dell Rapids. It was called the Odd Fellows Orphanage. And Uncle Roderick was too old to go there. He had to work, and my mother was too old to go there, so she went to work. And Uncle Russell and Uncle Orville MacDonald both joined the Navy. I believe seven of my aunts and uncles were raised in that orphanage in Dell Rapids. And I'm sure the people that are still my age around and have been around a long time Remember them McDonald kids at the orphanage.
Now, when your father was listening to the radio and listening to what was going on in, you know, in England, how did that come out for him? How did his family do?
They all survived. The only one that did not survive was this baby that was born to my uncle Sydney and our my aunt, uncle Sydney and Aunt Brenda. We also had a parade for Howard Hicks, who had been in a who was a POW of the Japanese in World War II, and I remember the parade. And we also had a man who I did not know. I did know Howard Hicks slightly, because he was somewhat older than me, but another young man named Stonick from Martin, who lost his life. And they had some kind of a memorial service for him in Martin that the spring after the war was over. Some of the songs we sang at school were the Army Air Force song, like Off We Go Into the Wild Blue Yonder, and the infantry song, Over Hill, Over Dale, and Anchors Away for the Navy, Anchors Away, My Boys, and the Marine hymn, From the Halls of Montezuma to the Shores of Tripoli, and I do not remember the Coast Guard song. Could not find anybody else who remembered it. And then other songs that we sang were The White Cliffs of Dover. And Over There, we used World War II songs. They fit perfectly. Over There, Over There. And When Johnny Comes Marching Home Again, of course, we could really sing that. Everybody knew that. And we would sing that about every day. Anyway, another thing that I had that was brought up to me, and that I had a stint on the top of the high school watching for unidentified aircraft, which I couldn't possibly have identified, but I was about 17 then. And my friend was Beverly Rankin, and we sat up on the high school, or stood, or any, somebody helped us get up there, and we had shifts that we watched for planes. That's all I can tell you about that. I don't remember anything else. And this was the top of the Bennett County High School where we watched for planes. And we did it in shifts of two people. And my sister told me yesterday on the phone that she had a shift there too, and that she was with somebody on top of the high school doing this. Still, I wonder yet what good I could have done, because I'm not much of a plane identifier. Anyway, when they were fighting the Battle of Britain, Britain had no allies in Western Europe, not one single ally. They were fighting the Germans alone. They had already captured four or five countries and were taking France. Another thing I remember is the President Roosevelt, the only president that I had ever known, died in April of 1945, and Hitler committed suicide also in April of 1945. I looked up in the encyclopedia about the bombs, and it said 190,000 tons of bombs were dropped on England during the war on the raid on Britain, and they continued until 1944. The turning point began then with the invasion of Normandy, France, in 1944. The Germans lost about 2,600 planes. And eventually, we signed a peace treaty with Japan, but it wasn't really. They declared VJ Day September 2nd, 1945, 3 years, 8 months, and 22 days after Pearl Harbor. And of course, when Pearl Harbor attacked, that's when the United States had entered the war for sure, because they hadn't been able to decide whether they should get into that fray. But the day the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor changed everything. And on October 6, 45, the atomic bomb was dropped on Hiroshima.
Can you remember the day of Pearl Harbor?
Oh, yes. December 7, 1941. We were in our living room. I think we were going to go to church, or else we were home, but I remember it just came onto the news. My dad didn't usually turn the radio on Sundays, but he did that day. And we all just turned and looked at him when he just had such an ashen expression. And I do remember my little sister Connie, who was 3 years younger than I was. And in 41, I would have been 11. So she would have been 7. And I remember She got actually nauseous, physically sick, because of the way my father reacted. Just he seemed in such pain and disbelief. And of course, we all stayed by the radio then, even though we didn't quite understand it. From then on, it was like listen to the news very regularly and be quiet when it was on.
Do you remember when the bombs dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki?
Yeah, we were in Martin then, of course, and it was a mystery to us because most of us didn't know anything about the atom bomb. All we knew was the Americans had done something that stopped the war. And really, really thousands of people were suffering physically in Japan. And I know we were all relieved it was over, but I remember we wondered, we all wondered what this thing was that did this. And who had been responsible. And then later we heard about General Doolittle's on this raid, these last raids they did, how he had sent 15, he had sent a bunch of planes to bomb. They knew they didn't have enough gas to get back, and 15 of them did not get to land in China or wherever they were going to land. 15 planes did not get to land, and about 60 planes went down, but the Chinese helped the people, helped the American flyers out of this jungle they were in. I remember that. When they played that World War II saga on PBS, I had never seen the whole series or the whole every battle like I did this one day, and I just stayed at the TV all day on that Sunday, I believe it was. They played the whole thing. I couldn't believe it.
My generation was colored by the Vietnam War, and yours was colored, I would imagine, by World War II.
I'm sure, I'm sure. And of course, I know that it appears there have to be wars. It looks that way. But I'll never get over the fact of watching the veterans that I knew, both in Hot Springs, where my dad finally passed away as a veteran, and Fort Meade. And I'll never get over thinking how much we have probably written off what all these people gave. It's really incomprehensible when you think that we're still going through this sort of thing in another era, and it appears to be another long-lasting conflict. And you see the boys being sent back several times, probably more times than they ever were in World War II. I mean, just hope it's for some good cause to come out of it. I do think it was important what they did in the schools, selling the savings bonds and the stamps every day. The United States sold, I looked this up, the United States sold $156 trillion in saving bonds and stamps and certificates during that period. What we would do from home was take our dimes. And then, of course, there was the scrap drives and the singing of the songs, like maybe once or twice a week, of all the patriotic songs and the songs. And especially the boys loved the Air Force, Navy, Infantry, and Marines songs. They loved the boys. They always used to really sing loud. Anyway, I do think it was important that the schools did what they did, because I think it instilled in a lasting patriotism. And you still can tell when you look through an audience, no matter whether it's a graduation or a funeral or whatever, when the flag goes by, you still can kind of tell which ones have a little different background.
Okay, we've been talking to Helen Crosswaite, whose family was influenced by World War II, both in England and here in the United States. Helen, I'd like to thank you for talking to us today.
You're very welcome. I enjoyed it.